Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's Eric the Freedom Screamer. We got Gary and Chris, and also we are blessed that John Lamb. We got John, too. So we'll get right over to John Lamb right now. John, can you tell us anything that went on interesting down there in Las Vegas at the Bundy trials today? Ladies and gentlemen, John Lamb.
Yes, thank you, Eric. Yeah, we had another interesting day here in court. It seems like nothing can surprise us anymore with every day is a new mystery in this trial. Unlike the last two trials, the government kept the defendants shut up pretty much the whole trial, and they still ultimately lost those two trials. This trial's even looking better. We had our second witness. So we're in day nine out here. Day nine, that's picking the jurors. It took us 3 days, and then all the days of all these motions being heard. And our first witness today is day nine, and we're just on our second witness. This second witness they brought in today, he's from Denver, Colorado. He's actually the BLM's lawyer. So the BLM hired their own attorney to go after Clive and Bundy back in 2012. And that was 2 years before the standoff. 2012, this attorney started relitigating the trespassed cows, the allegation of these trespassed cows on public land. And after 2 years of litigation and fighting and trying to get new court orders to remove these cows, we found out today, this attorney helped get the paperwork in order to get the indictment going for Dan Love and the rest of the BLM there. What was really interesting, what we found out today, is that one of the prosecution team, she's assistant prosecutor Nadia Omed, she has sat in this trial the last three trials. So the last two trials, she was an assistant prosecutor, and she sits at the counsel's table with the prosecutors, and she speaks and does objections and all that kind of stuff for the last two trials and this one. Before this case, she was working with this attorney in the civil litigations with the BLM against Clive and Bundy.
Oh, that's not a
big conflict of interest. Big conflict of interest. I don't know if you can see that or not. I'm sure you can real fast. But she was at the standoff even. This female prosecutor, Nadia Omed, she was April 12th of 2014, she was there that day. She'd been in litigations against the Bundys in the civil matter for 2 years. She was hired by the Department of Interior, and now she's switched roles. Instead of being a civil attorney for the federal government, now she is helping prosecute this case. This is brand new evidence we just found out today. We have pictures of her there. We have now emails that just got released to us just last night that confirm this. And this is stuff the prosecution has been hiding from the defendants all along.
Oh, it sounds like they're really hurting for witnesses.
They definitely are. They're hurting for witnesses. And Mr. Whipple, Clive and Bundy's attorney, brought up a good point today. He says this is a case of entrapment. And he's telling this to the jurors even and to the judge. All along, we're finding out just now, this is a case of entrapment where this government has entrapped these people. Clive and Bundy didn't do nothing what they're actually saying. They set him up and entrapped him into what they're doing. Snipers, video cameras without warrants, just on and on and on, we're finding out. Missing computers. They had paper shredders there that shredded thousands of documents. Emails missing that were just barely uncovering. And what else are we going to find?
Oh, it's shades of the Nazis, but as the Russians are closing in from one side and Patton's closing in from the other, there's burning documents and shredding, destroying film, video footage, and fleeing the country and putting putting their doubles in place to stage their deaths. And, oh, my God, it's like the rats are fleeing the ship. I wish they'd flee a little more thoroughly, but, you know, we're working on it. How do you read the jury?
The jury, they are at the edge of their seats with this. Their questions are proving it.
Yeah.
Their looks on their faces, they're shocked to find out. And Mr. Whipple said, you know the difference, he tells this witness and the jurors today. You know the difference between a civil litigation and a criminal case. And he asked, this witness is an attorney. He's been an attorney for 35 years for the federal government. His whole job, he said his clients are federal agencies such as environmental agencies, OSHA, BLM, Park Service. That's who his clients are. He doesn't protect Americans. He fights for the federal government litigation against Americans. And he's been doing this for 35 years. And he asked this,
dirtball.
Yeah, and he asked, Mr. Whipple asked this witness, Mr. Petrie is his name, Larry Petrie. And he said, what's the difference between civil cases and criminal? And the prosecutors object. They don't want that answered. But it is.
Oh no, because then you're right. Because hold. Let me interject. Yes. Because right there is where we're walking into UCC law, and the truth comes out that they're being tried on commercial violations, not criminal.
That's right. That's right. That's what we're getting down to here. And then he brought up a point after that, and he said, Does the BLM or the federal government have to obey state law? This attorney under oath today said absolutely not. We just choose to make things easier sometimes for the public to understand that we don't have to obey by state law.
Oh, thanks.
So, yes, and the jurors got to hear this because he said we didn't have to get a court order against Clive and Bundy for the trespass cows. We could have just went out there and took them. But we chose to make the public understand what the procedures we were going through to do.
Oh.
That contradicts everything here. Yes.
Look at it all. First of all, just the scumbaggery of all the thieving from the American, the command and control freak, the dirtball attorney thing, the condescending, talking down to the jury, what we're trying to do. They had to have seen, they had to have been sitting there going, typical sleazeball attorney. I think I know where we're going to go with this. Mr. Sleazeball attorney, you piece of crap, you. I see you for what you are. Do you think the jury is thinking that way? That's the way I'd be thinking if I was on the jury.
Oh, I definitely do. The jurors are seeing plumb through this. They definitely are.
I was going to say two things. That's the same attitude we saw portrayed by Kosinen and Loretta Lynch and, of course, the one from Lois Lerner. And this is the arrogant attitude because these are agencies. They're private corporate agencies outside the spheres of the chains of the Constitution, and they think they can do anything, the same thing that I've run across here. But also, attorneys are not competent to be a witness. That's Trinzi versus Pagliaro, and, of course, there's a myriad of other cases, Haynes v. Kerner, U.S. versus Holt, U.S. versus Lobosco, unless... having attorneys testify, inventing their own facts, and entrapping people, that makes them like an inquisitor or a hitman, actually, or a fixer.
And get this, sir. What they got brought up today, the judge said today that this is treading on very dangerous grounds here, she says, because this is making one of the prosecutors on this case a potential witness in this case. How is that going to work? One of the prosecutors, Nahi Olmed, she was on the ground there. She was there. She was gathering evidence for 2+ years. And then she's prosecuting the case. It's, now she is a witness for the defense or for the government side. And she's actually prosecuting it. This case, I mean, it's such a sham.
It looks to me like they're... it looks to me like they're running low on people that want to do this level of evil, so they're kind of double-dipping, bringing judges in out of retirement. They got a limited pool of scum that they can dip into when they need evil done, and I think that's why that you're going to see people double and triple dutying in this tyranny.
They definitely are. It's I don't see how this case can continue. They're just going to keep violating more and more, you know, stuff, court stuff here, and but right now they're going to continue the tyranny. They're not stopping it at this point. And they're afraid that they're going to give it up. One of the prosecutors today said, "Your Honor, we're the prosecutors here. We're not on trial. What's the defense think they're doing here? They're bringing up all this frivolous stuff." Well, it's not frivolous at all. It's facts. It's been proven, and they just don't want to face their problems here that they brought it up on themselves. And they thought
well,
they were
going to
keep it hidden.
The only thing I can see that's good about it is that there's so many grounds for overturn on appeal that may be the silver lining, you know. John, Gary had a question last night. Were the Bundys offered ever any plea bargain? And if they were, they obviously turned it down. But do you know what went down with that?
They were all offered plea bargains. The Bundy men themselves were offered quite long sentences, except for the two brothers that are still waiting on trial. And I'm understanding that they were offered 6 years apiece, David Bundy and Mel Bundy. But, of course, they all denied it. They won't even hear it. They said they don't want no part of it. So we've got Jason Wood still waiting on trial, Joe O'Shaughnessy. That's four guys that are still waiting in Pahrump, Nevada. Don't even know a court date at all yet. But they have all been turned down and denied all the plea bargains or plea offers on the table that they've been offered. They've denied them. And then here we've got Cliven Bundy, you know, Ammon Bundy, Ryan Payne from Montana, those four guys. And Ryan Payne has been offered a plea deal, but he's totally turned it down also.
Yeah, it's they're going all the way with the jury and the Lord and the right thing. You know, it's at some point in life you have to make a stand, and this is they are here, and I respect that. And you know, we have to stand with these people. I want to see more people at that courthouse. Anybody within driving distance of Las Vegas should be there. At least go for a day or two and witness this trial. Make that courthouse overflow with people. The system sees. Is the pushback from the public, and it will make a difference. So you still got the jury nullification word getting out there. The jury's on their edge of their seat. Do you think there's? I mean, because I know, like you're probably like me, you're looking at the jury real close. You probably know all those faces by heart right now. Do you think there's anybody in there who will really know what they got to do and might hold their ground and hang that jury?
I definitely do. I believe that we have the majority have been won. There was a couple of jurors that I was very unsure of at first, and I didn't really take a liking to them because of some of their answers that they had and questions. But the last couple of days that more have come out, them jurors have been good jurors. They're just listening. They're not trying to be biased either way. They look like they're just sober-faced. You can't read them. I mean, you'd think they was a poker player. but when they give their good questions and they ask these witnesses, they get to the point. They want to know exactly what this witness meant when they say certain things. So that's what's been so good. We didn't finish up with this witness yet today. We went all day long on one witness. The prosecution, when they first started asking this witness questions, they spent about an hour. Our defense team has spent the rest of the day on this witness and still have not finished. We're going to go into tomorrow yet to finish up with this witness. It's been awesome to see because before in these last cases, the government will go over a witness and spend two or three, 4 hours, 5 hours on a witness. The defense team will spend 10 minutes. been the opposite so far. The defense team has drilled these witnesses, digging and digging to get the information that they need and get these answers, answer to the jurors. We want the whole truth. That's what they've been telling every single time when they get that witness up there and say, we don't want just part of the truth. We want these jurors to see both sides. And we want all of the truth. We don't want redacted information. We don't want things hidden from these jurors. We want all of it. And that's what we've been getting so far.
Sounds like it's going as well as could be expected, all things considered, with the deck stacked against the accused.
It really has. One thing one of the defense attorneys brought up that I've never thought of it this way, on the Fifth Amendment, the prosecution's trying to limit certain questions asked of these witnesses and limit certain information that's coming out. And one of the defense attorneys stood up and he said, by limiting these witnesses and these answers and these questions and this evidence that the prosecution is trying to keep out is in violation of my client's Fifth Amendment right, because he has a Fifth Amendment right not to testify against himself, and all the evidence should be presented so the jurors can hear it all. But if this evidence is limited and restricted, my client's going to be forced to testify on his own behalf. Now, Cliven Bundy and all of these defendants plan on testifying. That's not their point. But their point is why should their testimony be so limited where they have to testify to bring in evidence? It should be able to be brought in all along. So I thought that was a good point, where not only are these other constitutional rights been violated all along, such as speedy trial, no bond, and all of these, but their Fifth Amendment right is also being violated because they're not allowed to bring in all this evidence. And they're forced to testify.
Yeah, the suppression of evidence, I mean, that's a clearly, the withholding of evidence by the prosecution. I've seen cases get overturned by the New York State Court of Appeals, that were pretty substantial cases, and we're not talking about traffic tickets or anything, big stuff, because the district attorney withheld evidence that would have benefited the accused, the defendant, and so that's grounds for overturn on appeal if they're holding back. And of course, if she's the judge is suppressing evidence, there has to be a reason to do that. I mean, there has to be, and the reason could only be, that it's somehow not pertinent or not. Doesn't have bearing on the trial. It's for somehow, it's irrelevant to the case, and almost all the evidence in this case should be submitted. There shouldn't be anything that's left out. So it just looks like more grounds for overturn on appeal, hopefully, if it goes bad and there are any guilty verdicts handed down. But at this point, looking more like at least the jury is, from your read, is at least open-minded by the questions they've asked in the past few days. And now, at what point, at what point does the jury get, I've never seen that before, the jury, you said the jury gets to ask questions to the defendants to the witnesses?
Yeah, something brand new that just happened in this last trial with Eric Parker and Scott Drexler and that crew. Trial here in Nevada. What's that?
Brand new, at the courtesy of the Witches Court in Nevada. Okay, so now they get to have, I don't mean to laugh, but it's absurd. So they get to have, this is brand new, and it was
brand
started
new.
Out. So this is nothing that's been seen before. I mean, I've never heard of it. Is it something that the Nevada legislature has approved, or is it a courtroom procedural thing that the witches have just made up out of their pot with their cauldron of that they stir into their little stands? Where did it come from?
Go ahead, sir.
I recall that in the last trials preceding this one, that there were frequently written questions taken by the jurors. In fact, Gloria Navarro would call and ask for them. Then they would take them under sidebar with the sound blocked out so that people couldn't hear, and then she would decide which questions could be asked. This is exactly what you would call a star chamber court, where the judge is actually acting and intervening in the prosecution, much like the embedded agent was deeply involved in the investigation and the development of evidence that she's now testifying and putting herself subject to being called to the stand as a witness and being cross-examined under oath, where she libels herself to being charged for perjury because she'll lie herself all her tail off that's what attorneys do.
Well, sure, we know that. The lying witch, right, lying witch is right. But no, but how does it, to me, it can only benefit, and tell me if I'm wrong, John or Chris, but it can only benefit the defendants. It can only benefit the Bundys to have the jury be able to ask them questions directly. I think that's a bonus for the person who's, isn't it?
It definitely is. Like in the first trial, when we had the first trial, it didn't happen. The prosecutions came back because the prosecution ultimately lost that first trial too. There was four defendants that there was no verdict. It was a hung jury. So the second trial, it was actually the prosecution's ideal to have these questions from the jurors because they wanted a little bit more insight of these jurors so they could mold their trial and witnesses around these questions, but it backfired on them. And this trial, these defendants requested it and demanded it, said, hey, the last trial, those defendants got that privilege. We want it too. We want that right. So the judge continued it, and it is for our benefit. It really helps us also see what the jurors are thinking each day by their questions. It's definitely helped us.
Oh, fantastic. John, hang on a sec. We got Lori Anderson. We are blessed to have Lori as well as John. Let's bring in Lori and see what she wants to converse with John a little bit. Lori, how are you tonight?
Hi, I am hanging in here, doing well. Thank you so much, and I'm excited Lori. To be able to be here tonight. How is everyone?
Excellent. Go for it.
Excellent. Well, John, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I've got a couple of questions for John. Some exciting questions. Now, this is my theory. If I was on the defense, because I heard about, is her name Nadia Ahmed? Is that her name?
Yes.
She was the lady who actually worked for the Department of Justice first, and she was caught at the Bundy Ranch via pictures exposed. And so we know she was actually there, and she was part of the implementation, from what I'm gathering. If I'm not correct, John, just stop me in my tracks. So,
okay.
This lady whom was there, actually there, not watching via TV, but was actually boots on the ground, foot on the ground, was over there. And we know that this leads toward an entrapment case, but I've got a different angle for this. She was on the ground. She was there. She was there before the protest happened, correct?
Yes, she definitely was.
Okay, she met with the FBI. She met with the Bureau of Land Management, correct?
Yes, she was one of the attorneys that was advising them.
Okay, so here's the kicker. This is what I would do if I was the defense attorney. Because this information just came out and was sprung on the defense. As the defense attorney, I would add her to the witness list myself as a hostile witness. That way, not only would she have, because she was there, so she has to be allowed to be on that witness list to have her examined, which would also pull her off of prosecution. That's what I would do.
Excellent point. Yes, it is.
That's what I would do. Another question. Go ahead.
I was going to say two things. One, it seems, one, we should be asking for a mistrial on prosecutorial egregious or gross abuse of discretion. And two, if she's being held as a hostile witness, then the defense can ask leading questions.
Well, here's one of the things. I wouldn't go for a mistrial just for the simple fact then they're going to have to go right back over this all over again. Dismissal, yes, because they've lost subject matter jurisdiction a long time ago. Because you have personal and then you have subject matter jurisdiction, and in order to keep that jurisdiction, you have to remain within the confines of certain procedural code, which, of course, they have not done. And not to mention the canons and everything else. However, that's what I would do as a defense attorney. If I was one of their defense attorneys, I would add that woman to the list of witnesses immediately, which would pull her and force her off of the prosecution, for one. But also, I would want her on the stand. Because not only that, the jury's going to see, oh, wait a minute, she was the prosecution, and now she's sitting on the witness in the witness stand. That right there would be phenomenal to see. Also, what else did I find very interesting that you have been reporting about? Of course, we know. Has any new information come out about the federal BAU?
There was some information today, and we'll flip to my notes, that came out on that today. It was about behavioral analysis, threat assessments, and things like that. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the one that the FBI did versus the BLM.
They touched on it for a while today on it, and a lot of that stuff is under seal. So we have to leave the courtroom, or they talk in just around about the subject and mention things. They read a lot. But they was definitely talked about. The FBI threat assessment and the other report, that BUA report, they got so many different letters for this kind of stuff. But all of these different reports they had, the only report that came back as a high threat was the BLM themselves. The FBI report was no threat. Even the BUA report came back as low to moderate at the most. And that was because Cliven Bundy said, he made a statement that says, whatever it takes. And that that statement there made it a low to moderate threat.
I have a point
on that.
Go ahead.
Well, first and foremost, this so-called behavioral analysis unit threat assessment is completely subjective and interpretive, not based upon any fixed scientific facts that are third-party peer-reviewed, and therefore it's pseudoscience or witch doctrine. Kumho Tire Company versus Carmichael and the Daubert analysis three-pronged test for observability, measurability, and repeatability. You can't find any there. Junk science.
Well, here's my analysis. Here's my thought on this. I know why they want to keep it classified. I know why they want to keep it sealed. Because with the FBI saying that they were no threat, and then in the other report, John, I think you said it was the BUA, they were considered low to a moderate threat.
Yes.
If that actually gets released, the people are going to say, then why the reaction with the dogs, the automatic weapons, the SWAT teams, the drones, this in 2014, plus the 2016 event in Malheur. What do you think about that?
Exactly. And they have used all of that. One thing that has helped them with the Malheur standoff there, or the stand-up, is that they were acquitted there. So that took all of that away from this prosecution team. It's hard for them to use that because Cliven never went. Ammon and Ryan Bundy were acquitted. So it's actually that acquittal has actually helped them with that, because a lot of that can't be used against them any longer.
Okay, John, give us just one moment. We're going to hear a couple of words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Everyone, hang with us.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read a few from Amazon.com. Dr. Sam Serino reviewed the Extendivite product. Good ingredients, feeling much better since taking product. It seems that the tablets work well. Once again, thank you for your product. My acid reflux has really improved thanks to the Extendivite. Together with my thumb joints, the pain is gone and I'm able to grip things much better. My friend has peripheral arterial disorder and their lower legs were hurting in a red color, but thankfully there has been a significant improvement. Kind regards, Janice. My husband feels a big difference using Extendivite. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite. Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to the broadcast. It's Eric with Lori and Gary and Chris. Back to you, Lori Anderson.
Yes, thank you so very, very much. So, John, we were discussing those reports, and really it is my solid belief that the reason that they want to keep those quiet is because then the FBI, the BLM, Department of Homeland Security, when you've got those Department of Homeland Security documents on domestic, you know, terrorists that went out all the many years ago that the Southern Poverty Law Center had their hand in handing out to make it seem as if the Bundys were such a threat. Well, their justification for actually going out with the type of force that they did dissipates if that report comes out. Correct?
That is correct, yes. Definitely is. And you know, all these reports are still incomplete. There's so much missing. I just looked through my notes here, and I don't know what all these letters mean because this stuff is kind of in a semi-sealed court procedure today. But the BLM did, with the DOJ, Department of Justice, did two other reports too that I haven't followed through what they all mean yet. But it's called OIG report. So OIG and
Inspector General.
Okay.
Is that
Office of Inspector General.
Okay, and then another report was done called the GAO.
That's Government Accountability Office.
Yep. Okay, so those are two additional reports done separate of the FBI, the BLM, and then this that other report I was just telling you about that was the BUI or whatever there. So
the BAU.
Pretty.
Now here's a question: Did they say for the OIG report and the GAO report, was that specifically related to Bundy?
Yes, it definitely was, 100%.
Okay.
And they was talking about these reports, possibly, and these are my notes here that I'm reading on it because some of this was so vague, but these reports could impeach and may be helpful in many ways against some of the other stuff like what Dan Love has claimed and said and these other testimonies we've already had. They impeach these testimonies.
That's why it's so important for us to get them.
Okay, so let me just tell you this. Oh, wow. Okay, so I'm going to put a link, John, because I did a little bit of my tricks. And the OIG report is actually publicly available. The OIG report, 2016, a review of the FBI's impersonation of a journalist in a criminal investigation, revised September 2016. Over the course of 1 week, in June of 2007, a 15-year-old high school student emailed a series of bomb threats to administrators and staff at Timberland High School near Seattle, Washington. And I understand this is 2007. I understand that. But when I type in, okay, I'm going to fast forward to 2000. Let me see what it says in here. Okay. The FBI did not publicize the assistance its agents provided local law enforcement. However, July 18th, 2007, 2 days after the individual pleaded guilty, an online technology news website published an article that detailed the method by which the FBI identified the individual. 7 years later, in October 2014, the Seattle Times published an article that disclosed the fact that an FBI employee posed as a member of the news media when it contacted and then identified the subject as the author of bomb threats. Later at that same month, the AP sent a letter to then Attorney General Eric Holder protesting the FBI's impersonation of a member of the news media in connection with the FBI's investigation of, quote, bomb threats. In addition, several newspapers wrote articles questioning the tactics the FBI used to identify and arrest the subject who sent the threat. 1 week later, November the 6th, 2014, FBI Director James Comey wrote a letter to the editor of the New York Times defending the FBI's actions. In particular, Comey stated that the technique the FBI used to identify and apprehend the individual who sent the threats was proper and appropriate under the Justice Department and FBI guidelines at the time. And that, quote, today, the use of such an unusual technique would probably require higher level approvals than in 2007, but it would still be lawful in a rare case appropriate. Okay, so this appears to be one of the things, I can't go into this whole report because this just popped up. I'm just letting you know. But remember, that happened at the Bundy Ranch too. And when I just did the OIG and I typed in Clive and Bundy, this is what came up. So I'm sure that somewhere in here probably has.
Well, that is very interesting because if we remember, this was kind of brought up briefly today about fake news, and we didn't elaborate on it. The defense team didn't, but in the last two trials, Longbow was brought up. That was that
right.
fake news organization by the FBI. Charlie Johnson was an undercover name. We still haven't identified his real name, but he testified on the stand with that fake name as he being the person that was responsible for Longbow and orchestrated it and did all of his investigation secretly as Longbow Production. That's very interesting.
Well, I'm sending that. I have now given that to Mike where he can place it underneath the radio show description. And people can get that PDF. It's from the OIG. Now, it may not, you know, like I said, all I did was quickly type in OIG report on Bundy is all I did. So it may or may not be directly related to that. But that's one of the first things that came up was that, which may be beneficial actually to the case out there because it's talking about, you know, the media in the way that it does. So you know how that is. But there's quite a lot of times they hide stuff in plain sight. You know what I mean, John? They'll have it in public, but they won't have it in public view where it's easy to find. They hide it and bury it. Where they'll act like in court it's so classified, but the reality is if you know key terms, a lot of times you can find these because they're already out there. You just have to kind of know where to dig and have a lot of hours to do it, believe me. But we'll definitely also keep an eye out and do some digging and try to find that stuff out too, because now I have some of those three letters analogies.
Yeah,
and I will help see if I can find something for you guys to send your way too as well. I also wanted to ask you, I don't know if I don't know if you've already let the people know, but did you let everybody know about the good news about Skylar Barbara?
I did. So our little update we had today, I didn't do it on your show here. I hadn't got to that, but Skylar Barbara did get out today. When I did my live update just a little earlier, we brought actually some of the supporters on my live feed. That was there with him today. They talked about it. One of them was Andrea Parker and Eric Parker. They went over there to congratulate him as he got released. So that was a big day for him and his family and all of the supporters. That's good news.
That is good news. Congratulations to Skylar. We definitely are glad to know that one more person is out of the federal lockup. And they've really targeted a lot of people. It's sad. It is truly sad. So I will sit back and let you finish updating everybody now that I've chimed in and asked you a couple of more questions. And if I have any more questions, then I will definitely I'll chime in. You know me.
Well, I've pretty much finished up with the update of the day. We got we're going to be in court a little earlier tomorrow. The judge wants us there earlier to go over more motions and stuff before the jurors come in. We have to be there by 7:30 just to get in there and get ready. But we have another long day ahead of us. We still haven't finished up with this number two witness, this Larry Petrie. And he's actually an attorney for 35 years. That's his job. He works for the federal government, litigating cases for them, and he's a witness for the prosecution. But tomorrow we're going to finish up with him, and then we have three more government witnesses that all work for the federal government that if we get those all in tomorrow, we'll see. But so far, just like all the other cases, not a single civilian witness. Every one of them are paid and work for the federal government, some capacity. It is just crazy that they do this. There's no victim, no crime, but they keep moving forward with this.
Oh, there's plenty of victims, and there's plenty of crimes, but it is the Bundys that are victimized. It is the protesters that are victimized. It is the federal government that brandished weapons, and not only brandished weapons, but put the red dots, what a lot of people use in order to make sure you hit your target, red dots on individuals. And if I'm not mistaken, John, correct me if I'm wrong, were there or were there not red dots on the women and children and the men that were unarmed as well? Is that correct?
It is definitely correct. There are videos to prove that. There are witnesses to prove that. There definitely was red dots on women and children and other unarmed men. And I've talked to some of those people myself.
Do you know if they're going to allow the footage, not just the video, but the sound of when those quote-unquote BLM or non-government organizations or mercenaries, whichever term you want to give them, do you know if they're going to allow the sound to be played when they were joking about who they were going to kill first?
We did get that omitted this time. That was something that we had not allowed the last two trials, and it has been omitted, and the jurors have already got bits and pieces of that video that the defense team played in opening statement. It was amazing to get it in right at the get-go. So it is being played.
Oh, that is wonderful. I don't see any juror, even if they are in the, let's say they were put there, you know what I mean? And I'm not saying any of them are, I'm just saying this hypothetical. Even if they're put there, if you hear them joking about who you're going to shoot first because you think it's funny.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
The BLM agents are making fun of the women that are overweight. They're making fun of different ones, in, you know, old man and this and that. And that mm-hmm. they, you know, that'll be an easy target, you know. And it just, you know, the jurors are going to see this. The BLM was not scared. They were behind vehicles. They had plenty of cover, if anything. And they were the ones pointing the guns at the protesters, at women and children.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, even with that, the famous picture that they love to show of Eric Parker, if you look at that picture, his finger was not on the trigger. So he was still doing safety while he I mean, it's insane. But you had this other in Eric Parker's trial, and I really hope this one comes back up there. Because if you remember in Eric Parker's trial, there was one individual who admitted he not only had Eric Parker in his sight, but he was ready to shoot to kill. But the reason that they didn't was because there was, what was it, it was some sort of truck behind him or some people or something that stopped him from firing to kill Eric Parker.
Yes, and one thing good about that, we have those transcripts to go over for these witnesses. So we have a little insight of what them witnesses testified to last time. The government is trying to exclude some of those witnesses because they don't want them to get back up on the stand and impeach themselves with lies and misrepresentative. And you remember, some of those agents got up there and cried on the stand last time.
Yeah.
You know, almost 4 years later, and they're crying on the stand and saying how scared they were when there's no evidence to back that.
Well, you know, I'm going to say this, and I've said this from the get-go for, you know, even before the Bundy situation ever came up. If you are in law enforcement, okay, whether it's the sheriff's department, whether it's the police department, whether you are not law enforcement and your Bureau of Land Management, not Bureau of Land, I'm going to attack people and steal their land. I know they think that they are, have police powers, but of course, you know, they expose that too in the undercover video. They admit they don't have the arrest authority. Of course they don't. They're land managers and they don't do a good job at that. So here's my thing, right? A lot of people want you to feel sorry for, and I've got good friends, okay, who are constitutional sheriffs and or former law enforcement, and I mean, they're hardcore pro-constitution, okay? And here's the thing, and they know I love them dearly, but here's the thing. If you're going in law enforcement, before you ever get into law enforcement, you know what kind of job it is, okay? You know...
Exactly.
What kind of position you're putting your... I'm not going to feel sorry for you if you feel scared because you've put yourself in that position. If you cannot handle that type of thing, you don't need to be in law enforcement, period. I mean, I'm just saying, if you get traumatized over somebody walking by you or protesters who are... They weren't brandishing the weapons. They weren't drawing their weapons. They weren't acting insane. If you feel uncomfortable about that and it makes you feel so scared that you're going to cry, you need to get a different profession. I mean, that's just the way
Lori,
it is. Yes.
If you don't mind, I know sure. something about this, having been a professional law enforcement public safety professional for many years
mm-hmm.
when we used to
mm-hmm.
protect and serve the people. But mm-hmm. part of what drew us to that bivocation was the excitement, the adrenaline, the thrill, the possibility of encountering mm-hmm. bad guys and taking them down, stopping the threat, protecting people from violent criminals, and perhaps going in a high-speed auto chase.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what made us exciting for us. That's why we went to those jobs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, just like guys when they go into the military and the special forces, a lot of times they're asked, why are you going to put yourself through this? Because I get to blow stuff up, and they don't say stuff, of course. But the reality is, and I love dearly those that are true blue to the people, and they're really trying to protect the people and not protect the codes. You know that. So But the reality is, they don't need to be in that situation if they're going to be so traumatized. You know, I don't live in a la-la land area surrounded by fences around my house like Hillary Clinton does, even though she doesn't want fences around our United States of America. And we'll get on that on a different time. That's fine. But I'm just trying to make a point. My point is this.
Okay, go ahead.
My point is this. I don't live in their imaginary protected world. I am a female, which they, you know, want to consider a quote-unquote minority. Okay, so I'll laugh at that too. But anyway, I'm going from their side and their mentality. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm in a very diverse neighborhood. Okay? I am not in a neighborhood that is ritzy. I am in a neighborhood that you better be able to protect your own and your neighbors. Okay? This neighborhood that I am in, when I first moved in here, had a lot of major crime problems. Very rarely do you ever see crime in my neighborhood now. I'm just saying.
Our neighborhood is a safe neighborhood.
Well,
I was going to say that Iqbal and Tomley, they use repetitively, tells you that mere rote recitations of formulaic words to invoke fear or infuse the jury are insufficient to rise to the level of proof. And this is what the law enforcement officials have done. They continually claim, I was in fear for my life, with no fact pattern basis to support it, other than it tries to create a pretextual illusion that they had the reason to use deadly force when they really had none.
Well, here's the thing, okay? If I'm paid, which I'm not, but let's do some hypotheticals here. If I was paid to be a Secret Service agent, I'm paid to put my life in danger. If I am paid to go and arrest criminals, it's kind of common sense. I'm paid to put my life in danger, right? I myself, now this is on the real deal with what I just told you about my neighborhood. It's not the popo. Sorry, I'm just going to say it that way. It's not the popo that straightened this neighborhood out. Okay? Me and a couple of other women decided we are not going to have this in our neighborhood. The elderly in our neighborhood used to not be able to sit out on their porches, and they do now.
Mama Grizzly.
People used to not. Yeah, I'm a mama bear, not just for me and my family, but for my neighborhood. You know? And they know. Don't come here. The police officers know. They know I'm armed. I open carry. I wave at them every time. And you know what? I don't wait for the stupid EPA three-letter agency to come tell me my neighborhood needs to be cleaned up. I pick up a garbage bag. I go down the streets and I start picking it up. Not because I'm paid, just because it's right. I don't need BLM or EPA to tell me there's trash over there in that gutter, or there's trash over there in that ditch, or there's trash over there in that yard. And it doesn't look so good. Guess what? Go pick it up. It don't take a dime. Just takes a little bit of time. And then we don't have millions. We have to pay them to do this false sense of junk. To steal our liberties. I'm just saying. But John, I would love to see, and I don't know if you're going to talk to any of the defense attorneys, which I'm sure you are. But if you do, make that suggestion that they make her on the witness list. Because now it has just come out. They surprised you with that information, so now you need to put her on the witness list.
Exactly. No, I definitely talk to them all the time, so I'm definitely going to bring that up to them. That's a great point, and I totally agree. We need to add her name to this list.
Well, not only will that force her to testify, right, but it'll also force her off the prosecution, too.
Exactly.
Because you can't prosecute something you're on the witness list to testify on.
That's exactly right.
So that's just a suggestion, a personal suggestion from me.
Yeah, and have him do it in front of the jury, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Right. Don't do it behind anything. Do it in front of the jury for sure so that that's stuck in their head. You know, so
exactly.
That's, because otherwise they'll scoot that around and really try to, you know, call a new witness, Your Honor. There you go.
Oh, good broadcast. We got about 1 minute left. What an excellent broadcast. John Lamb, thank you so much for being with us tonight. This has been really a blessing to have you, the eyes and ears right there on the ground and reporting it here on the RBN Network. Much appreciated. Can you check in with us later in the week as well?
Yes, definitely. Thanks again, Eric, for having me on, and Lori, and it's a pleasure to be on here and report to you what's going on, letting the world know. You know, they're not hearing it from no one else, like you said before. The media has.
It's up to us. Yeah. I the silence is deafening. The other outfits are not even mentioning it. I can't believe it. It's the most important trial, like Lori said, and you said it affects pretty much. We've pretty much touched on almost every amendment. It affects every amendment from the Bill of Rights. Mm-hmm. It affects every person in this country who values freedom. Oh, and I would think that would be all of us, even the witches.
Or even values steak, Eric.
Yeah.
Or even values steak, because they are shutting down the food supply for Americans. That's what they're doing, intentionally. So, I mean,
I was shocked to find out there's only one. I found out there's only, from an owner of a market that's closing down, there's only one food wholesale operation in upstate New York right now. Every single bit of food that goes to the stores comes from out of state. What happens with the trucking? I mean, like you said, and that's not by accident. That way, it's much easier, like you said. I hate to get too conspiratorial, but they can shut down the food supply. Very simple. That was kind of shocking to find out. In a state this large, that there's only one food wholesale outfit left, and they're kind of on the brink, you know, of struggling. Well, anyway, listen.
Clark County, Nevada, there's only one rancher left, and that's Cliven Bundy.
Oh, and that's the Bundy boy. So this is like the last stand, folks. I mean, really, this truly
is.
The last stand for the Republic in many ways, and I don't think that's an overstatement. Thank you so much, John Lamb. Thank you, Laurie Anderson. Thank you, Gary and Chris, for hanging in there and commentary. Appreciate you back. Thank you, Mike Herzog. Thank you, John Statmiller. Thank you, Mike, on the board. Appreciate everybody. Thank you, our callers, and please support the network. We'll see you again tomorrow night. We'll have Laurie on again as well. Laurie, say a little last few words. Have a good night, everybody.
As always, everyone, thank you. God bless you. Watch your backs, check your facts, Semper Fidelis, and good night.
Basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver.